Caleb Parsons is 6'9 swing man. He can shoot the three.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello, and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Saturday, July 25th. I'm Kyle Maestri, and we're on our way back from SEC Media Days in Hoover, currently somewhere in Georgia, I believe.
Yeah, we're east of Albany, heading towards the magical city of Tipton.
Right, that's exactly where we are. And with me today are...
Mike McCall, your driver and football beat writer.
Mike DiFerdinando, football beat writer.
And Kyle Maestri again will be... I'm going to play the host role for the first time ever. So we're going to start with Steve Spurrier and his magical speech that he gave today in front of an audience of about 200 media members, maybe a little more because it started to fill in when it was his turn to come in. News had broke just before he got to us that it was him who left Tebow off of his ballot, which was kind of disappointing because we would have liked for it to have unfolded in front of our eyes. But both of you guys wrote either a story or a column on Spurrier today. So, McCall, why don't you go ahead and start with what you did, and then we'll pass it to Deeper.
My story was pretty much just a blow-by-blow account of what happened. Basically, what happened was Spurrier was in the radio interview room before he came into the print journalist room where we were. And I guess it was there that he got kind of cornered and forced to admit it. And apparently it took a lot of questioning. They had to like force that out of him. There were several questions where someone said, "Coach, you're still not really answering the question," until they finally pushed him into admitting it. But it's weird. He didn't just not vote for Tebow. What happened was he didn't fill out his ballot. He had an assistant do it, and then he just checked it off, signed it off, and handed it in. Now, he says he didn't look over the list completely. He said the only two names he saw were Georgia receiver A.J. Green and then Florida defensive end Carlos Dunlop. He said, all right. And he signed it off. And then Thursday morning of this week, when he saw the paper and saw that every question every coach was getting asked who didn't vote for him, he said, oh, a coach made a mistake by leaving him off the list. That shouldn't have happened. And then he called the director of football operations in South Carolina and said, that wasn't us, was it? And when he found out it was, he said he called Charles Bloom, one of the associate commissioners for the Southeastern Conference, and asked to change his vote. They did change the vote, and now Tim Tebow, this whole mess has come to an end, with Tebow being a unanimous selection for the All-SEC team.
Okay, first of all, how hilarious is Steve Spurrier? What a guy, right?
Yeah.
I waited all week to hear him talk. He completely lived up to the hype.
He was the best by far. I really thought Kiffin was going to give me the most entertainment, but it was definitely Spurrier, although I think some of it was unintentional comedy. But he was definitely playing into it a little bit. He just had really no shame, so that I think allowed him to be so funny up there.
Right, and all right, so throughout the week, there were a lot of theories bouncing around about who it was. We were all between Kiffin and Chizik. We're not getting an answer for the most part. A few people suggested Spurrier, which I think we unanimously shot down, especially me, pretty viciously, I think. I got to give a quick shout out to my friend Chubbs, who said Spurrier from day one, and I slapped it down right off the bat. He ended up being right, so sorry, Chubbs, I apologize. But I'm not ready to give full credit to the Spurrier people because their theory was that Tebow is not the prototypical quarterback for Spurrier, and the Jevon Snead from Ole Miss would be more that type, and also that Spurrier is jealous of Florida's success. Now, the Snead thing, maybe he's more prototypical quarterback, but Spurrier loves Tebow, and I don't think there was any doubt about that with the way he was speaking to them. He was gushing over Tebow, said him and Danny Werfel might be the best college football players ever. He's all over it. And then he starts crediting Urban Meyer, saying he's been the best coach in the nation for the last 3 years. There's no question about it. The program's done wonderful things. Their players are clean. All this stuff, just on and on and on and on. So I think both those theories are discounted. And if what he's saying is true about him not filling out his ballot, it's doubly untrue. It was just a stupid mistake. It's not like Spurrier made a conscious decision. So you get credit for the right answer if you said Spurrier, but the reasoning behind it, unless you said it was just a total mistake and he didn't even fill it out. You don't get credit for it in my mind.
I mean, I think it was definitely just a mistake. There's no way he intentionally did. I think he doesn't probably really even care at all. He said he hadn't filled out his ballot in like 17 years. So.
I kind of believe him because I like him and I want to believe him. But on a plausibility scale, I definitely think the following scenario is possible. I think the ballots are supposed to be anonymous and are anonymous. It's only the coaches that, you know, they could have not answered our question when we asked them who they voted for. So I think Spurrier maybe did it just as a we have a lot of Gators on here, and Tebow needs my vote the least out of all the Gators, so let's just throw Jevin Snead a bone, and then I won't get accused of, like, voting for all these Gators. And then it was supposed to be anonymous. No one was ever supposed to know, so it wouldn't have mattered. But then it turned into this big witch hunt for the guy who didn't vote for Tebow. And at that point, I think they needed some kind of out. And it's super easy to just be like, oh, the SID screwed stuff up. And, like, he filled out the ballot. And I wasn't really paying attention. I just signed off on it. And pretty much putting all the blame on the SID, which no one cares about, I think is, like, the best way you can deflect any criticism there. So, I mean, he apologized and he seemed pretty sincere in his apology and stuff, but I don't know. I think that that's not out of the realm of possibility as far as, like plausibility goes, if we would have known this before.
But one thing we did hear was Les Miles from LSU, who else said it? Did any other coach admit to not filling out his ballot completely alone?
Pippen said he had help.
Yeah. Miles said he had help, which really means they didn't fill it out. They just looked it over. Like, that's what I was saying. I mean, it sounds like this is like a tradition among coaches.
Right.
And Spurrier said that when he found out and he asked the guy who filled it out, he said something about there already being 10 Gators on there and he didn't feel like he needed to put more. Now, what you're saying makes more sense than anything I've heard, that, you know, Tebow doesn't need the vote. The way I was thinking about it was, if you're going to leave a Florida player off, why would you leave the most deserving off? But what you just said makes sense.
Because you know that's the guy who's going to get on without your vote.
Right. But I still look at it more like he probably didn't. I believe what's
right. Yeah, I pretty much believe him, but I'm definitely not ruling that scenario out. And he was absolutely a quote machine up there today. He said, like, some really great stuff. And I know, D, for your column was mostly about just the entertainment of his speech. And maybe, I don't know if you remember a couple of the funny quotes.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. You already mentioned the one about Carlos Dunlap and AJ Greeny. He was like, oh, yeah, that's great. Send it in. Talked about not filling out his ballot for 17 years.
Yeah, he said he never filled one out in the 17 years that he's been coaching in the SEC.
Someone asked a question about, like, about coaches, like, filling out their, like, top 25 ballots, and asked if he did it. And he made some kind of comment, like, I don't even know why coaches do it. Like, none of us really know about the other teams anyway.
Right, yeah.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, the quote was awesome. It was something along the lines of, like, I don't know why we still do that. I guess it's because college football doesn't have a playoff system yet. But we do vote, and I don't think a lot of the coaches know a lot about the other teams out there. So you can check out, you know, the Alligator. It'll be in Tuesday's copy, I'm sure. Pick up the couple of Spurrier stories that we wrote. And before we move on, McCall, I guess you want to say something else?
Yeah, another good moment from him is he was asked about one of his assistant coaches that he brought on recently. And at first, he didn't understand the name of what the name they were saying.
Lorenzo Ward was the guy.
Right, and he kept saying, excuse me, can you repeat that? And then he was, Coach Ward, okay. Like, he said something real quick, and then he said, yeah, we play golf a lot together. He's got a great stick.
Great hell of a stick. Golfer.
Yeah, he's a hell of a golfer. And then he's like, and he's a good coach.
Yeah.
That was another great moment. You could just see Spurrier's thought process when he's still in the offseason, so on golf.
Right. It was definitely funny. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, though, with Spurrier, I guess, was, do we think changing the vote is totally kosher? Like, even if it was an accident, it's like, okay, you pissed away the vote. You don't get a mulligan on, like, a presidential election vote or something like that. So I think it should have been left as is. It was really weird to me that he called up Bloom, and Bloom was like, oh, yeah, no problem. We'll change the vote for you, Steve.
I think that if this is anyone else but Tebow, this never happened. I mean, the whole witch hunt doesn't happen, but the vote definitely doesn't get changed. I think that's probably true. I think it's ridiculous that it got changed. At the same time, the preseason All-SEC team as voted on by the media was also done this week and finalized today. So, I don't know. This is the last possible time that I would consider it within the realm of possibility to do.
Right.
You know, after this week, when the media has already sent out their team and the coaches has already been finalized for like a month, no possible way. It's already stupid that they went and changed the vote, but it's not like Tebow really cared whether it was unanimous. We just all wanted to know who did it and why. We just wanted a reason why. It's not like if someone got up there and admitted it, they would have been ridiculed to death. I just wanted to hear why, the thought process behind it, and apparently there wasn't one.
Right, yeah, definitely true. And it's not so much that this thing matters. Tebow's on it, on the first team anyway, by a significant margin. And the preseason, you know, polls and teams mean essentially nothing. It's just an honor, really. But I just think changing the vote was a weird thing that probably wouldn't be allowed in other circumstances.
Yeah, one other thing that this brings up that was interesting, and we saw in the press conference, because as soon as Spurrier said, I didn't fill out my ballot, I had somebody help. Pat Forty from ESPN's hand shot in the air, and he said, do you fill out your you know, regular season coaches poll ballot? Like, how serious are coaches taking this? And that's an issue. Now, all the coaches that were asked this after that said, I fill out my regular season ballot.
But you know they could see that coming. So that makes me wonder, how much are they really, you know, how much time are they really spending on this? Are they having help? And that's that concerns me a little bit because it is part of the BCS formula.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but Spurrier, he fielded another question because Spurrier has been a proponent of keeping their names attached to who votes for what in as far as the top 25 goes. He's spoken on the media saying, like, you know, if you vote some for somebody, and he said it again today, if you vote somebody for somebody, put your name on it. Go ahead, let them know. Because I think as of 2010, there are not going to be names associated with the votes, and you're not going to know who voted for what school and stuff like that. Do you hear you?
I mean, I don't think any of these coaches really spend the time during the season when they have games to prepare for the next week. Like look at all the teams across the country, say, oh, Utah is playing great, or, you know, TCU or someone out west. They know the teams in their conference and the teams they're going to play. But outside of that, I'm not sure how much expertise they really have.
I think they do have I think they have at least expertise that, you know, a pretty rabid college football fan has, where it's like, you know, all the major conference schools, you know what they're going to be every year. And then maybe you don't know a whole lot about Utah, but maybe you know they have Brian Johnson and, like, a couple other players. You know, you know, like, a couple of their studs. You know the score of their game last week. You probably couldn't break down the defensive scheme they're running or what kind of teams give them trouble. But I think they know a little something. And I hope that they take the 10 minutes out of their day to just fill out the poll, only because it counts for something.
I think it all depends on, you don't know where a coach has been before, where some of the guys he's coached with are now, where some of the guys he recruited are. I mean, I think that all factors into it, but you're definitely going to see the teams they play a lot. They're going to value them higher or lower based on what they see of them, because they see a lot more of them. They watch film. Like, the SEC coaches are almost likely going to value the SEC above everyone else, because they play in it. They think they're in the toughest conference in the nation, because they are, but, you know, all that builds on each other.
Absolutely, and when you look at the preseason polls, they clearly know nothing and don't care at all, because the same big-name schools are in the top 25 preseason polls every single year, regardless of performance. Wisconsin, it seems like, always gets a pass at the beginning of the year and gets a super high ranking, only to lose it later on. But, I mean, it just shows that there shouldn't even be preseason rankings, in my opinion. Just let the teams have a little bit on their resume before you rank them on something.
I think you're right about, like, playing favorites. I'm sure Urban Meyer gives Utah a little help when they're up and coming. I'm sure if Mississippi State's having a pretty good year in games, they get Dan Mullen a little boost. So, I mean, I think that all factors into it.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Yeah.
Well, you guys want to move on to the bit of news today coming out about the Florida football team? I just thought of it because we just passed a cop car pulling somebody over on the side of the road. It came out today that Florida linebacker Dustin Doe was arrested on Thursday. It was his second time being pulled over with a suspended license, and now he's going to be suspended from the team. Now, that's pretty dumb, but this whole thing that makes this even more ridiculous to get suspended for, from his, like, he should not have let it get this far. He had a parking ticket. He paid the
It wasn't a parking ticket. It was a traffic ticket.
Oh, it said parking ticket.
Yeah, no, the quote was, Urban Meyer said something like, he didn't pay a parking ticket, now this is what happened. But in the story I read, it was like a moving violation ticket, which I'm pretty sure you can't get your license suspended for not paying a parking ticket. But it does make sense for not paying a moving violation ticket.
He paid the ticket, but then did not pay the late fee because he waited too long to pay it. So with that late fee, he got his license suspended. He's been pulled over twice since, and now he's off the team for we don't know how long.
Right.
Fantastic segue, by the way.
But here's the problem for me. It's not that he got a speeding ticket or whatever moving violation ticket that he got. It's not that he didn't pay it until late. It's not that he didn't pay the late fee, and it's not that he got pulled over the first time for driving without a license. My problem is that he got pulled over one time for driving without a license, and then just did it again, just completely disregarded it, above the law. I'm a Florida football player in Gainesville, most likely attitude. I can just do whatever I want, and went out there, or not even that. I'm just a college kid, and I'm above the law, and this stuff doesn't happen to me. I'm just going to do whatever I want. And you need to know, like, look, my name, my face is on this program. I can't keep getting pulled over and arrested and bailed out of jail and all this stuff all the time. And it's something that's so easily avoidable. There's public transportation you can take. You got plenty of friends that can drive you around. Call a member of the football staff. I'm sure they'd rather do that than you drive around.
Oh, snap.
Do something. But I just – the real problem I have, and the reason I don't feel bad for him, even though it's not this huge deal, is because he let it happen to him twice with the driving without a license thing.
Right, and I don't feel bad for him either. I didn't mean to say it that way. I just mean that this is going to be made into a big deal, I'm sure, by some people. It's another arrest and another suspension. That's how, like, the headlines will play it up.
Right.
When it's really just something really stupid. And this kind of goes into what we were talking about in the last two podcasts about the arrest record in Florida and how it's just kind of overblown. And this is a perfect example of that to me. It's just a stupid arrest, something that totally avoidable, just showing poor judgment.
Do you anything?
I mean, this is kind of a stupid story in my opinion. I mean, the traffic thing is kind of a ticky-tack crime. I mean, I understand what you're saying about it reflecting poorly on the school. It's a stupid decision for him. But I agree with Mike when he says that it's kind of blown out of proportion. The headlines aren't nearly as bad as what actually happened.
But I mean, is he allowed to just disregard the law pretty much? Like, at what point does he have to say, okay, I should follow the law and pay my parking ticket, and then, okay, I should follow the law and pay the late fee. Okay, I should follow the law and not get back on the road after I've already been suspended, pulled over for driving with a suspended license. Like, at what point does he have to say, all right, I'm going to give a crap about the system that's in place here and just try to be a good representation for the program?
I mean, this is hard to defend, but we don't know, like, the exact circumstances. You don't know how far you're driving. You might have been just going down the block to, like, go to a friend's house or something. Not that it justifies it or makes it right, but, like,
and you don't know.
I don't think he's just, like, driving all around Gainesville, like, come and get me.
You don't know, also, he may have got the license suspended with the stipulation that he can still drive to school or to practice or whatever if he lives off campus. I know some people who've had suspended licenses and they still had that clause attached to it. So, I mean, it's a little different to me. It makes it easier for you to want to bend the rules when you're allowed to drive somewhere but not everywhere. And it's still wrong for him to do that. But to your question, I'm a pretty firm believer that you shouldn't get in trouble for the same thing twice.
Right.
Once you get in trouble for something, you should learn from it. Not
exactly.
I mean, getting pulled over with a suspended license, for me, that would make me not want to do that again because I know the risks and I know what's involved.
Exactly.
And when you're someone like Dustin Doze who's been in trouble in the past with the program, I don't know why you push it. Like, why do you push it? It just isn't the kind of discipline that you want to see in the offseason from a player. And I'm not talking about, like, the whole team's out of control. I'm just saying Dustin Doze individually, as a starter on the defense, needs to have a lot more accountability than that and be thinking about his teammates when he does something like that.
Absolutely. It's so needless. That's 100% right. I'm glad that you feel that way. And the other thing is, you know, you said he's a starter on the defense, and he's not going to be with the team instead when they start practice on August 6th. He may be back a week later, 2 weeks later, a month later, 2 months later. I really don't know. It hasn't been released yet. But if he does not come back, you figure maybe you'll see Hicks come in and take his spot, but does this mean maybe there will be more playing time for, like, a John Bostic or somebody coming up?
I think there's a good chance we'll see John Bostic because he was awesome in the spring. I mean, the coaches are raving about him. He just had a whole summer, I'm assuming, getting a lot bigger and scarier. So that's a good sign for him. This probably won't happen, but if my boy Jelani Jenkins can get in there, I'll be ecstatic. I love Jelani Jenkins. I think he'll be a stud, but I don't know if he's ready this year or not.
I mean, I don't think he's going to lose his job for being suspended for, like, a week or not. However many short days Irvin's going to let this go.
Well, I mean, if you're suspended from the team, you can't play with the team. So I'm just saying...
How long is that going to last?
Whoa, it doesn't matter when he comes back. This is a really competitive defense. This second-string defense could be another team's SEC defense. I mean, this is a really good team. And you can't just be missing practice.
But he won a national title. I mean, I understand he's great guys, but he's still part of that, the core of the defense.
Right. So, but all these other guys are almost as good. I mean, they can fill in without missing much of a beat.
Okay.
You saw that last year when Doe was out for a little while, Jones was out for a little while. I mean, Spikes was out for a game or two. This happens, and they can totally make up for it. It's not a huge deal.
I tend to agree with McCall on this, but that wasn't even the question. I was just saying if he's not with the team when they're playing. Not gonna be able to play if he's not with the team.
Yeah,
he's
selfish that he's not gonna be with the team for practice, especially when he's supposed to be a leader, someone who's important to the team.
He might miss the first game. A really typical Urban Meyer usage of a suspension, I said that with quotes, is that he doesn't announce it, and since they play these patsies at the beginning of the year, they'll sit out the game or they'll sit out the first half, and then afterward they'll say, oh yeah, they were suspended for this. And by that point, I mean, it's not that he didn't do his job, because he did, but I think there's an element of public shaming that needs to go along with suspending someone. Like, Dustin Doe having his name in the papers for being suspended for something stupid, maybe it's not going to connect with Dustin Doe if he did the same thing twice and got arrested for it, but for me, if my name's in the paper for being suspended for something and it's out there, I'm even less likely to do it again.
Exactly. It's an accountability issue. It's like, instead of kind of sweeping it under the rug as much as you can and not having him, you know, face the criticism that's out there, it's just protecting him as much as possible for a mistake that he made when, you know, he should have to take accountability for his actions.
And I think that the football suspension, taking football away, is a bigger punishment than anything the state of Florida can do. I mean, you're going to fine him or whatever, even a ticket.
But I think taking away from football, making him like deal with that, and maybe be afraid of losing his job, or maybe miss the first game, is way more of a wake up call than anything like practical.
I don't think this is going to be a long term suspension. I think he maybe misses a week of practice, 2 weeks of practice, comes back, and then sits out the first game. I mean, this isn't like, we're not talking about Dustin Doe rejoining the team like Tennessee week or something like that. It's not that serious. At least I don't think so.
Right. I mean, we don't really know how much legal trouble he's in. So we're going to have to wait and see on that. I don't know the laws as far as multiple offenses for driving without a license or whatever. So we'll just have to see as this story develops. So moving on from the Dustin Doe talk, the third thing we wanted to talk about was another coach today at SEC Media Days, Lane Kiffin. He wrapped up the entire SEC Media Days as far as coaching goes, got up on stage and addressed the media. He was pretty, you know, pretty full of personality up there like we expected, but not in a bad way, really. He just was very, very passionate answering questions, pretty enthusiastic, bright-eyed and young like you would expect. So what do you guys think of Lane Kiffin today?
Well, it was funny because he walks up on stage and he has his SEC, like, all for preseason, all SEC ballot in his hand, like, ready to show the media. He'll say, I voted for Tebow. So that was kind of funny because I'm sure he was expecting all week to get, like, crucified as soon as he got up there.
Well, he knew people like me don't take his word at nothing, so he wanted to have some physical proof with him, which I give him credit for. So
I actually was very impressed by Lane Kiffin. I thought he did a really good job. I thought he was, I mean, from what I can tell, but I know this is the point, if you're not telling the truth, but I thought he was pretty truthful. I didn't think he was, like, you know, skirting questions a lot. I thought he was doing a pretty good job of answering what was asked to him. And for what it's worth, I had to ask all five coaches in the SEC who had coached in the NFL previously what they think of Tebow's pro career prospects and whether or not they think he's worthy of a top 10 pick. Now, the guys I asked were Rich Brooks, Nick Saban, Les Miles, Steve Spurrier, and there's one more.
Petrino.
Petrino, there you go. All right. All those guys, you know, Gush said, oh, you know, he'll be fine. He'll do great in the NFL, whatever. When the top 10 pick question rolled around, they all said, well, you know, you have to evaluate at the time. You have to see what the team needs are, see who else is going to be in there. Kiffin jumped right on and said, absolutely. I don't know why you wouldn't want that guy on your team. I don't understand why you don't want a guy who's proven he can win on your team. And he talked about how when he recruited Tebow when he was at USC, he came to Jacksonville, went to the Tebow's house, and they were watching Tim throw the ball and run around. And he was with a couple other college scouts, and they were saying, I don't know, like, I don't like his release. I don't like the way he throws the ball. It doesn't have a good spiral. And Lane was saying, look at the results. Go watch film. Like, look at the way they score. They run up and down the field on people. And it's the same thing that he's done in college. And I thought Lane was extremely complimentary of Tebow, more so than any other coach. And he also said that he had 11 Florida players on his preseason All-SEC ballot. So I think we're dealing with a slightly more rational human being than we all thought going into this process.
Well, yeah, he went on the Tebow issue. He went as far as to say if he had a top 5 pick, he would want to be taking that. Tebow would be the guy that he would want to be taking with that pick.
That is much further than
that anyone was willing to go. Absolutely. And as far as seeing a different Kiffin, he more or less, in not, you know, these exact words, admitted that the statements that he made in the offseason was just to put attention on the program. He said, you know, somebody asked him questions about it, and he's like, look, there's no football games going on. There's nothing else to cover. He's like, I want the Tennessee name out there. People at least heard about us in the offseason. And, you know, we're trying to recruit players, and we're trying to put Tennessee back on the map, and we were just trying to get attention.
Yeah, and he made the point, like, every time a high school kid opens up a magazine and sees the Tennessee logo on something, that's, like, it's planted in their mind. Oh, Tennessee's important, they're out there. I think that's a good point. It's something he was trying to do to build the program. He may have gone about it in a very wrong way, but I don't fault him for trying to a certain degree. And his safety, Eric Berry, backed him up on this pretty hard. He said, look, Coach went out there in the offseason with the mindset of, we got to get the Tennessee name out there, put it out there. And Eric said he knew what was going on the whole time. He knew what his coach was trying to do. So that lends a lot of credibility to Kiffin to me, because that would have been a good excuse to use. It still is a good excuse if it is an excuse. But I think it makes sense for him to do that. And one thing, I mean, Lane Kiffin is young. And he is, like, I mean, you see him, and he looks like, he's like, we said this, fifth or sixth year senior. He could pass for that. He really could. And it's a different generation of coaching. And I think coming up in a different generation, he has maybe more of an eye for marketing and what it takes to get your name out there at this time when everyone's so, you you know, focused on either celebrity or news getting around, controversy. And he did a good job of stirring it up. Tennessee's had good results in recruiting. He put together a great staff. And he's very personable and very charismatic. He's going to do well in recruiting. He's going to do well with the media. I think Lane Kiffin could end up, if he doesn't do something stupid to blow it all away right at the beginning, I think Lane Kiffin could end up being a very successful coach in Tennessee.
Well, he certainly took the approach of any press is good press in the offseason. And, you know, if I were a recruit, that's not the kind of person I want to play for. But I do understand his strategy. You know, he's going to play it how he wants to play it, and we'll see what his results are, you know. Because at least a couple people, you know, that is going to attract some players with it. I don't know how many people, how many players it would attract. But, you know, he kind of picked off some people from Hokie with some comments and stuff. So I think he needs to be a little bit more careful. But, you know, that's the approach he chose to go with. Then we'll see, you know, he brought in a good class, and we'll see if he can develop his players now.
He did address those Pahokee comments where he said something at the same meeting where he said he was going to turn Florida in for recruiting violations, that, you know, Pahokee doesn't have a fax machine or something, and it's tough getting in touch with them down there. And the coach or the principal at Pahokee said, we're not going to let him back in the school. He said today he has that all patched up, which had been previously reported from Pahokee. So
right.
It seems like any bridges he burned, he's kind of mended, except sure, Urban still doesn't like him.
Right.
But, I mean, you're not going to fix that.
I think the other thing you have to consider, too, is Kiffin's out, he's making all this noise and stuff, but he actually has a really good staff at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. His dad, Monty Kiffin, was in the NFL for a long time.
Right.
Ed Orgeron's running the offense over there. When they bring these kids in, it's not just all this, like, fluff and advertising and whatnot. There's a lot of stuff there to sell these kids.
Right. And let's not confuse Monty Kiffin with somebody who just kind of bounced around from, like, job to job, was a positional coach at 5 or 6 different organizations over 20 years. He was like the defensive coordinator in the NFL for a while for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when they had those great defenses for years and years. He won a Super Bowl. If I were a defensive player, I would love to play for Monty Kiffin. He's absolutely the kind of guy I would love to go play for, who has a ton of NFL connections, who's going to sell you on the next level and be able to really get you in with some coaches.
And it sounded like both Kiffins have connected really well with Eric Berry already. He's the leader of the team. That's really cool. Also, I thought this was really neat. Lane said, after his dad had decided to leave the Bucks set up, you know, his office and got him a bunch of SEC game footage and everything, so he could go ahead and start breaking down SEC offenses. I thought that was really cool, and that's how things should be done in this world. You're at a place for a really long time. You do a really good job. You leave to go work with your son at another place. It's not a competitor. Help him out. I mean, this is still, you're still building a bridge with Monty Kiffin at Tennessee if you want to get their players coming out. You obviously like the way Monty Kiffin does things and the way he coaches, so you're going to want his players coming to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Monty Kiffin was a guy who probably had a chance to be a head coach on multiple occasions and, you know, was loyal to his organization. So it's nice to see them kind of pay him back a little bit. But you spoke about Eric Berry, and it was mentioned at the press conference by moderator, and, you know, Lane Kiffin's mentioned it. He's not shy about it. They're kind of launching a Heisman campaign for the star senior safety this year, junior safety, I'm sorry. And what do you guys think about that? I mean, I think he's a great player, but I think it's pretty bold to launch a campaign for a defensive player.
Well, you guys heard what they said in there. Lane said he doesn't want to put Eric on offense because he feels like it's not fair to him when he's trying to learn his third new defense or fourth new defense in 3 years or something like that. And then Eric Berry said, yeah, I'll probably be back there on offense. So Lane's probably going to use him a little bit on offense. And if he's not willing to admit it, it's from a game planning perspective. If Eric's going to say it, it's probably because he's been told that he's going to. So that's something you have to do. He's going to have to do some stuff on special teams and on offense. I think we all know how I feel about the only primarily defensive player to win the Heisman, Charles Woodson. Probably the greatest athlete of all time, slightly behind David Garrard. And what you saw from him was lining up in the slot, catching passes, returning punts. He was a real menace out there. Now, Eric Berry is a really good athlete. It remains to be seen whether or not he's ready to do that. I know he played some quarterback in high school, but it remains to be seen how well he'll do. It's a little bit of a stretch, actually a lot of a stretch, with all the quarterbacks that are out there right now.
And two
there.
With Heismans in their pockets already.
Right, and Snead, who is getting a lot of hype right now, too. It's going to be really tough for Eric Berry to break in there.
Right, well, I think from Tennessee's point of view, I think they don't have a great quarterback, so to speak. Jonathan Crawford's maybe okay. If you have your best player play a little bit of offense, a few snaps a game, that's only good for Tennessee and Eric Berry. Like, he's out there, he scores a few touchdowns, he runs the Wildcat a little bit maybe. How is that bad for Tennessee at all?
Yeah, and I don't see how they just don't start landing, like, monster defensive recruits after this. It's like, not only will you get to play for a guy who led the best defense in the NFL for about 10 years in Monty Kiffin if you come here, but we'll also launch Heisman campaigns for you. We're not shy to do that if you're good enough. I think they're really doing some stuff that kids will like, despite some of Lane Kiffin's brasher actions in the offseason.
One thing that's going to be really important here, though, is at some point they have to shift from the get-attention phase into the back-it-up phase.
Right.
He's done a lot of talking. If they're going to hype Eric Berry for Heisman, they've got to back this stuff up. They can't just let it keep going like this. And you know, the season's coming, and Lane even said, you know, I don't have to, you know, go out there and get any hype anymore. We've got games coming up, and that's how we're going to prove ourselves. But they're going to have to back that up, and they're going to be coming to Gainesville. It might not be pretty. I mean, we'll see how it goes, but they've got a lot to prove still before, you know, they back up all this talk.
Right, and that's another reason why I think it's going to be extremely difficult for Eric Berry to win a Heisman, is because I don't think any of us expect his team to have wild success, and that seems to be a prerequisite when we're talking about Heisman winners from a historical standpoint.
Did take a few pictures with the trophy, though, before you left to Alabama today.
Which you called premature, and I called a little fantastical. So I think, have we covered all the Tennessee talk?
Yep.
All right. So now we're going to move on. We covered all our housekeeping issues for the final third day of Media Days, and we're going to give out some Reggie and Kyle's with a little Media Days theme to it, so it's all going to be relating to that. So why don't we start with the bad. McCall, you want to give us your Kyle Jackson Award, Bad Angle of the Week Award?
Yeah, my Kyle Jackson Bad Angle of the Week is going to the Winfrey Hotel, lovely hotel in Hoover where this event is held every year. But the room temperature was unbearably cold. My bones were cold. Like, I hurt to my core. It was so cold in that room. And we're in there for, like, 5 hours a day. It had to be, like, 65 degrees.
I mean, colder.
Kyle, you're a polar bear. You like it real cold. You get uncomfortably hot if it gets above 70. And and you were getting really cold. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think my threshold's somewhere in the 73 to 74 range. But, yeah, it takes a lot for me to be freezing. I was absolutely freezing. It was so cold in that room. And it was in, like, it was 9 o'clock in the morning, which wasn't helping anything. It was just really uncomfortable.
All right, I'm giving my Kyle Jackson Bad Angle of the Week to us in the media for snowballing this Tebow gate thing, like, way out of control. Selfishly, I'm sure we all enjoyed it, all liked it because it was funny, it was something to do. But it wasn't a story at all, actually. I mean, we just completely blew out of control, and I don't know, it wasn't great.
Well, the witch hunt entertained me all week, but my Kyle Jackson goes to a couple coaches who failed to do so at the podium in the Winfrey Hotel, and it goes to Mark Richt, the Georgia coach. He was very boring up there. I feel like he got short with a couple answers, clearly didn't want to be in front of the media, made no attempt to hide it. And Gene Chizik, the new coach of Auburn, who got up there and was slightly abrasive at times, I would even call him. He was just really not having it. He was trying to make a point. He did the whole let's chastise the media for blowing the Tebow thing up. Don't ask me who I voted for, but I'll tell you anyway, instead of just denying the answers. So Gene Chizik and Mark Richt, you get to share it for me.
Yeah, Chizik was real lame, I thought. And coming in, it's him, Dan Mullen at Mississippi State, and Lane Kiffin at Tennessee, like, making their first big appearance. And by far, Chizik was the worst out of the three. I mean, Mullen, you got to know what you're getting. He's a real nice guy. He's real, you know, he's going to be pretty good with the media. He did well. And Lane Kiffin, this is who I'm giving my Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport.
And we can segue into that.
So. Right, yeah. Mine goes to Lane Kiffin because he gave him and Dan Mullen both did a good job. But I was really impressed with Lane Kiffin. I went into it thinking he was going to be an idiot and say something else stupid. But he kind of patched up some of the stuff he did in the offseason. Still doesn't excuse it all. But he did a pretty good job. He was very good with that answer about Tebow. Like I said, it was good to hear him complimenting everybody else and not just being a guy who can't look past the rivalry. He's still able, you know, he's a football coach. He should be able to recognize talent and give credit where credit is due.
All right, well, giving a warm Reggie Nelson to Steve Spurrier. Despite not voting for Tebow, he was clearly the most entertaining coach of the week, I think. He was warm. He was funny. He was everything I wanted him to be. He was everything the SEC should be about on Media Day. So thanks for being a breath of fresh air.
And my Reggie Nelson is going to go to a pair of coaches who I came in pretty lukewarm on to, you know, just straight up not liking. And that's Bobby Petrino of Arkansas and Nick Saban, who spurned my Dolphins a couple years back, and I never really forgave him since. But I thought both of them stood up there, answered all the questions that were asked of them, were pretty good with the media as a whole, had a decent sense of humor, at least pretended like they didn't mind being there. So both of them can share my Reggie Nelson, rather, for a pretty good performance this week.
Yeah, and real quick, I'd like to give a group-wide Kyle Jackson. We just pulled off the road to McDonald's in Tifton, Georgia to finish up this podcast. And behind us in the parking lot, someone just got pulled over for speeding. So that's a Kyle Jackson for you, brother. If you end up listening to this in your small little black hatchback, you know it's you we're talking about. Nice work. Hey, make sure you pay that ticket on time. You don't want to get popped for driving with a suspended license.
Yeah, hopefully Dustin Doe not actually behind us. But with that, we are going to end this podcast. Stay tuned for one next week and read our extensive coverage coming up in the paper and at alligatorsports.org. And even shoot us an email or two if you feel like it. That's sports@alligator.org. And we're out.
Good night, Vince.